Welcome to Pro Money Talk. I'm Jason Papier.
I'm Peter Johnson.
We've got a great show for you today. Today's show is on retirement plans.
What would you be willing to do if you knew that you could save hundreds of thousands of dollars in income taxes while building a secure retirement?
Well, Peter, I'd be willing to do quite a bit.
You mentioned earlier that you'd be willing to kill the guy sitting next to you.
For just a fraction of that amount.
Anyway, would you be willing to invest a little time learning about the options available to you? That's what this show offers. This is a show about retirement plans in the United States, the different kinds of plans available. And even though there's quite a bit of talk about business owners, the show definitely applies to participants in plans like 401ks.
Yeah, absolutely. We had recorded a show on Roth 401ks, for instance, and that's something that's relatively new. And Sam and Peter talk about that in the interview. And so at your place of work, more and more, you're going to have choices. Do you want to contribute to a regular 401k? Do you want to contribute to a Roth 401k? Do you contribute to your 401k and then also contribute to something outside or in lieu of? These are all topics that you guys discuss. So regardless of whether the fact you're a business owner or an employee, the topic is very, very important. Now you talk about the not only the different retirement plans that are available, like the 401ks and the Roths and the IRAs, but you also talk about what considerations you need to make in choosing a plan as an individual or for a business.
And the good news is that laws have been changing in favor of savers for a number of years now, and people don't realize how good it really is, how much money you can put away, and how many different choices there are, and how some of it's been simplified. So every year it just keeps getting better and better. So it's a changing field. And along those lines, we have to mention that this first part of the interview was done in 2006, in March of 2006. We did a follow-up short interview in 2007 to catch up with the new tax laws. There was a law called the Pension Protection Act, which was passed in mid-2006. Our guest on the show is an expert's expert, Sam Harding. Is president of a small firm in Los Altos, California, that counsels businesses in setting up and administering retirement plans. And he explains things very, very well. And we tried to make it inclusive and not assume any prior knowledge, but it's not going to be boring for people who have knowledge or experience in these things at all. I'm really excited because people who have their own businesses often don't take advantage of what's in the tax code and what they're able to do.
Well, we see that a lot, not just with people who own their own businesses, but with people who don't own their own businesses, just not taking advantage of all the opportunities that the government gives us. And it's really not loopholes. It's things that they are trying to get us to take advantage of. And you said earlier that you can save quite a bit of money. And that's an area where people who haven't been practicing personal finance maybe for a long time sometimes fall short. They end up putting away money, for instance, for their children. They put that aside and they're not fully funding their retirement accounts, not realizing that it's much better to put the money in the retirement accounts. So retirement account savings is incredibly important, and hopefully this will give people the tools to be able to make good decisions. I should also mention that Sam has 25 years experience in this, so he really knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, it was fun for me to talk to him, and I learned a couple things myself. So I think you're going to enjoy it. I also want to mention here at the beginning of the show that we have a second segment. It's one of the success stories I've been talking about for nigh on all these years. Really neat story, a young man named Mike who is only 23 years old, but a young saver with insights beyond his years.
Yeah, he's one of those young people who seems to have an old soul, if you will. He has a lot of maturity and knowledge, almost innate knowledge around finance in the sense that he knows that he needs to listen to people and that he's really eager and to learn.
Yeah, I was amazed and inspired myself. So stay tuned after the main interview for that little short interview with Mike.
Of course, if you want to see the show notes, you can go to our website, www.promoneytalk.com, and you can join our mailing list or write us with questions. So without further ado.
So today we're fortunate to have Sam Harding as our guest. Sam is the founder and president of Retirement Administration, Inc., based in Los Altos, California, and is an accredited pension administrator. He has served a 3-year term on the board of directors of the National Institute of Pension Administrators and is the past president of the Northern California NIPA chapter. Sam brings more than 25 years of experience in meeting the retirement planning needs of small and medium-sized businesses. So welcome to the show.
Thank you, Peter. Nice to be with you.
This is a topic that I think people don't hear very much about in the commercial media, and yet it's a very important topic. Business owners receive special tax benefits under the U.S. tax code in terms of retirement plan and planning and how much they can put aside. Can you give our listeners some idea of just how attractive these retirement plans can be?
Yeah, retirement plans really are just a better way of saving and saving at larger amounts with the best part of it, tax advantages. And the tax advantages are really two. One is that the contributions or deferrals that go in are not currently taxed. If it's a 401k plan and it's a deferral, it reduces that person's current tax. If it's a profit-sharing plan contribution, then it reduces the employer tax. And then the second thing that's true for all retirement plans is that the money that's in the accounts and in the places for investment grows tax-deferred. No capital gains, no long-term, no short-term. It just keeps growing until the time that you take it out.
So for people who are just getting their arms around this subject, it's kind of like a big fat IRA.
It is. I mean, it's IRA is one kind of plan type, but the concept is the same, is that the money that's being invested and being deposited has this wonderful advantage that no other type of option does have.
And so we're not used to thinking in terms of an IRA where you can contribute $4,000 a year, or a 401k where you can contribute about $15,000 a year. Can you give us some idea of the magnitude of the contributions that can be made into these retirement plans if you're a business owner?
Yeah, as a business owner, you have quite a large set of options. The most common type of plan is a profit-sharing plan. 401k plans must be profit-sharing plans. That's the platform that 401k is a part of. Many people just think of it as a plan that allows the deferral from employees, but it also allows the employer to either make a match or a discretionary. And for 2006, that amount is the lesser of $44,000 or 25% of the total eligible contribution. Now, that gets a little confusing, but in essence, $44,000. It can be an amount greater than that if it's a 401k and the person is age 50 by December 31st, 06. So it can be a sizable amount of money. The other type of plan that has no limits on contribution is what's called a defined benefit plan. And the defined benefit plan has not gotten good press recently because IBM and others have canceled their defined benefit plans. We see a big growth in defined benefit plans in very small businesses, startups, consulting, sole proprietorships, where perhaps embarking on a new career, someone has paid off the mortgage, the kids are through school, and they're making a good salary or good income, don't need all of it. That's where a defined benefit plan can come in very handy, and there's lots of flexibility in terms of the planning and the operation.
So $44,000 for 401ks.
Profit sharing. It has to have a profit sharing component. In other words, a contribution. $15,000 is the maximum for a 401k deferral. $44,000 includes the $15,000, but that's the maximum that any one person can receive in any plan each year. So that's for 2006.
All right. So substantially more than an IRA. And I think that that's to incentivize people to start businesses. It's a national priority to create entrepreneurial spirit and to promote it.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll get back to the definitions in just a minute, too. You do retirement plan administration, and I wanted to give our listeners some idea of what that is and what you do. So what does that encompass?
Yeah, we have several kind of terms that are describing what we do. One is a TPA, or third-party administrator. Another is a record keeper. Those are kind of subsets of the things that we do. We work with qualified plans, and qualified plans is a whole set of plans, pension, profit sharing, 401k, money purchase, defined benefit, that require an annual report. Compared to IRA-type plans, Roth, contributory, rollover, SEPs, simples, those types of plans that are all IRA plans and do not require an annual report. There's still work that has to be done, but that's generally done by the company. So we work with qualified plans where each plan, each year, must have a filing, and the filing report is the Form 5500 and its supporting schedules. That has to be done each year. So that's what we do for over 300 clients, is we prepare all of the things that are necessary to complete the 5500, submit that signature ready for the client's signature, and we do that each year. So we're much like a CPA or that requires annual service to a client and to a plan.
So you're helping people administer and maintain plans that are in place. Do you also give advice to business owners on what kind of plan might be most advantageous to them?
Yeah, very much so. I have a, in fact, that's kind of the fun part starting out, is trying to get enough information to be able to deliver back to either a prospect or a takeover client of what might be more appealing than what they have now. And the world has changed recently so that there are some very appealing options, particularly for a profit-sharing plan that can skew contributions favorably towards owners or highly compensated employees. We do quite a bit of that.
So you're really an all-around consultant that helps business owners figure out how to sock away money in a preferred tax basis, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Design it so that you keep the employees and the owners happy, and then maintain the plans going forward, because there are a number of rules involved in this. And so let's get down to a little bit of terminology, some basics that I think people need, that we're going to be using these terms throughout the podcast. You mentioned a qualified plan, and my understanding of that is that that is a plan that is specifically defined and how can I say this?
Well, there's a whole code section devoted to qualified plans, code section 415, 415. And qualified, really, what that means is that the substance of the document has gone through some qualifying process, meaning it's gone to the IRS, and the terms and the conditions and the elements of the plan have gotten an approval from the IRS. So that's really what a qualified plan is. And the ones that qualified plans are ones that you commonly hear about: 401k, profit sharing, defined benefit, money purchase, ESOP. Those are all qualified plans. Plans that are not qualified plans, that are IRAs again, are SEPs, simples, SARSEPs, Roth, and contributory IRAs. Those are not qualified plans. The difference is, those are, the trustee of those types of plans is the place, meaning the brokerage firm, the vendor, and so forth. Whereas a qualified plan, the trustee is generally the person, the owner of the business. That person then can determine where and how they want to make contributions and how they want to do the investing. More control, more flexibility in a qualified plan.
And then there's this term defined benefit and the term defined contribution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's there are many options for defined contribution. As mentioned earlier, 401k, profit sharing. There really is just one kind of defined benefit. And the difference there is that defined contribution has a limit on the amount of money going in. For 2006, $44,000. There is no limit on the benefit for a defined benefit plan. There's no limit on the contribution for a defined benefit plan. The limit is what is the benefit and how much will that distribute to a person in the future. So it's not unusual to have someone in their late 40s, early 50s, if they're a consultant, let's say, have a $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 contribution to a defined benefit plan. And that can go on for years. The IRS generally likes to have at least a five-year term for a defined benefit plan. But again, no limit on the amount going in, only on the future value coming out.
So the way I think about those terms is the defined contribution specifies or defines what the contribution is, and the actual earnings in the plan are going to determine the eventual benefits, and that all falls on the person making the decisions about what it'll be invested in. The defined benefit plan specifies what the benefit will be, and the contributions are not specified. They can be anything yes. necessary to meet that benefit.
Yes. And different. Another difference is that in a defined benefit plan, as part of the structure of the plan, there's what's called an assumed rate of return, and it's generally 6 or 7%. Pretty much set by the IRS. So if you do better than expected and everything else is the same in terms of the people covered and so forth, then if you do better than expected, it can reduce the next year's contribution because you're ahead of the game in a way. If you do worse than expected, it can increase the next year's contribution because you're trying to catch up or be at a certain place each year.
So not to get too sidetracked, but if you set up a defined benefit plan, you are on the hook to fund that thing come hell or high water.
That is correct. And that is there is some flexibility in terms of amending some of the elements of the plan. But going into a defined benefit plan, you want to be thinking that I'm going to be able to do this at this level for at least 5 years.
And then there are rules about how much of the benefits of these plans can go to the owners or the highly compensated employees versus the staff people or the workers in the business. So there were, in the past, rules about top-heavy plans and mm-hmm. so on. So can you just yeah. briefly introduce us to the concept
sure.
of those different classes of employees?
Yeah, there's several different rule sets, and they all have to do with the chiefs being restricted based on the Indians' participation. And so highly compensated and top-heavy are terms that are fairly new. And a top-heavy plan is a plan at the end of the year in which more than 60% of the account balances are attributable to highly compensated individuals. And that highly compensated is defined as in 2006 as anyone making more than $100,000. There are other subsets of that, whether they're an officer, but basically the rules are that you have two groups of people. And in order for certain provisions of the plan to continue, you have to provide some benefit to the non-highly compensated employees so that the highly compensated, i.e. the top-heavy group, can continue or have a benefit also. So that we find these rules with 401k plans and all plans for compliance. And that's part of what we have to do each year is do these various compliance tests to make sure that those rules are covered.
So the idea is that business owners can give themselves pretty generous benefits, but they can't totally exclude the workers in the companies.
That's right. And so one of the questions that we ask when we're talking to a new client is, what do you want to accomplish from this plan? Do you want a plan that only benefits the employees? Because that would mean a certain type of plan. Do you want a plan that only or primarily benefits the owners or the owner group? That would be a different kind of plan. Or do you want one that does the best for both? And so a lot of that input determines the plan type and the operation of the plan.
So maybe we could just do a quick rundown on what some of the different major types of qualified plans are
that smaller businesses can use.
Sure. And actually, smaller or larger business, really, I find, is much in the mind of the beholder. Someone who started a business and now has 15 employees does not often think of themselves as a small business. When they started, they might be small, but now they have 15 people. To say that any plan can be adopted by any employer, no matter what size, meaning you can have a one-person defined benefit plan, a one-person 401k plan, a one-person profit sharing plan. And you can have those same plans for 100, 200, 300 person employer. So that's the, used to be there were rules where corporations could have certain types of plans or had limitations that were different from sole proprietorships or partnerships. Everything is basically the same now, whether it's a sole proprietorship, LLP, LLC, partnership, C-Corp, S-Corp, all of those business entities can have any and all plan and plan types.
Well, that's good to know. So we have these different kinds of qualified plans, and as you mentioned, IRA plans, which are not called qualified plans.
Right. The primary difference there is, I mentioned one, which was where the trustee or where the account is held. The second is the eligibility, and this often gets confusing. The eligibility for a SEP or a simple type plan is that, and this includes the owner, and this often gets confusing. There's generally a choice. What is the eligibility? A one-year eligibility or three of the 5 years? And the definition of a person that is covered is any person who makes more than $450 a year. That's the definition of an eligible or potentially eligible participant. Now, shifting over to qualified plans, the definition of an eligible participant is much greater. And that is, it is can be as great as age 21, full-time service, which means 1,000 hours in a 12-month period, and in many cases, employed on the last day of the plan year. So in a qualified plan, which is pension profit sharing 401k type plan, you have a longer period of potential service before that person could be eligible to be in the plan. And then the final big difference is vesting. In a SEP, simple, or an IRA, the accounts are 100% vested because they're actually individual IRA accounts. With a qualified plan, you can have up to a 6 year, or you can have, the most common is a 6 year graded vesting, meaning that the employer makes a contribution. Year one, if that person, that employee were to leave, they would get 0% of that. Year two, it would be 20%, and then so forth, 40, 60, 80, 100. The benefit there is that it is a way to retain people over a period of time. If they leave before they're fully vested, then the amount that's left behind is called a forfeiture. The forfeiture goes to those remaining employees on a pro rata basis.
So the whole key here is that these retirement plans can be designed for certain purposes, as you said, to take care of the employees, to take care of the owners, to take care of both. The law has certain limitations on what must be done. If you have a plan in place, minimum requirements, so you can stretch out the vesting up to 5 or 6 years, but you can't go beyond that. It used to be, I think, you could go 10 years.
Well, you can, but there's another set of circumstances. But the most common, I'd say, vesting that we see is the 6 year graded vesting. It's also is the default vesting for a top heavy plan. So that's has become probably the standard.
So I think the takeaway message, basically, for our listeners from this whole podcast is that there are lots of different options. They can be tailored to a specific business owner's needs and wants. And we're going to talk about some of the details today, but I would think that most people would need to talk to a professional about how to, you know, which plans to use and to make sure that they're in compliance. Because
yes.
it's not really a simple topic that we can cover
it
thoroughly in an hour.
Yeah, and it's one of the services that for no charge that we offer is just an evaluation of that. We will, if you give us name, address, telephone number, compensation, so forth, we can do a proposal that will show various types of allocation methods, and then the employer can say, well, this one looks more like what I want to do, and then we can proceed with that.
I'm sure you could tell us horror stories about companies that forgot to follow certain rules and so on that got into trouble later. So they, you need to consider what plan fits and then follow through with the correct paperwork and the correct funding and so mm-hmm. on to make it really work. There are a couple of new plan variations out there that are kind of interesting, and I think we've got a show in the works on the Roth 401k, but maybe you could just mm-hmm. briefly mention what is an individual 401k mm-hmm. and what is a Roth 401k.
Sure. Roth has been around for several years, and it's, as you may know, is Senator Roth, just like a Keogh plan is, because there was a Senator Keogh back in the 70s, and so the plans kind of got named after these people. Up until January 06, the Roth was an IRA-only type plan, and there was a compensation limitation. The benefit was you could put money into a Roth after tax. It would accumulate with all the tax benefits of any other plan, and then when you brought it out, you did not have to pay tax on it. So it was different than all other type of plans. All other type of plans, you have a deduction or a deferral going in. When it comes out, you pay tax. So that's been in place for several years. Starting in January 06, the rules have changed so that if a 401k plan wants to, they can offer a Roth option in their 401k plan. The two major differences are there is no longer the compensation test, and there's no longer the limitation, meaning the $4,000 limitation. So if your employer offered Roth as part of their 401k plan and you chose to put the full amount possible, $15,000 for 2006, if you could support that, you could put your full $15,000 as a Roth contribution. You could also split it between the two. You could go $7,500 as a traditional 401k deferral and $7,500 as a Roth deferral. There are still rules on how long you have to keep it in. I think it's a 3-year minimum. And but those are new rules. Actually, we are in the process of getting the final kind of substance language on how they'll be treated going forward. But right now, you could have a Roth provision. The other kind of newer plan is an individual 401k, and all that means is that if you have a successful business and you wanted to put in a contribution, you could have historically had something like a SEP or a profit sharing plan where the deduction comes from the employer portion of a tax return. All that an individual K allows you to do is have some of that come from the employee, particularly if the employee was taking a W-2, showing that as an employee contribution versus an employer contribution. The limits are the same. $44,000 is still the maximum that can be put in.
So an individual 401k, as I understand it, is useful for people that work alone and don't have employees.
Right. If you have employees, then you have reporting requirements, you have testing requirements, and it doesn't become, if your goal is to get the most for that one for yourself, it doesn't meet those future requirements as well.
Are there any shorthand rules that you are aware of for deciding if you do have a choice with a Roth 401k versus a traditional?
Well, I think practically speaking, what we've found is it's now we're in beginning of March. It's been 2 months since we've had this, that even though there was some early interest in this from our 401k plans, it has waned because when a participant employee was making that choice and they got to the point of, well, you mean this amount going to my Roth will not be a deferral or deduction? I'm going to have to pay tax on this before it goes in, has limited actually the number of people that have done this. We have, of our 50 or 60 401k plans, I think only three that have taken on this feature, because when it came down to it, the actual election and action of making this choice wasn't as attractive as I thought it was going to be.
So people are thinking short term about what they get right now.
Right. Everyone likes the long term. Oh, I could, this money can come out and I don't have to pay tax on it. And when this started several years ago, there was a provision in the first year for rollovers. A rollover from an existing rollover IRA could and still can be transferred or made into a Roth IRA. But what happens is that is a taxable event. So if someone has $100,000 in a rollover from a prior employer and they say, oh, great, I'm going to take this over and make this into a Roth IRA, that's a great idea. However, that year, they have $100,000 taxable income, and the tax on the Roth transfer cannot come from the Roth itself. In other words, you can't say, well, I'm going to pay 25%, so I'm going to take it out and pay this. It cannot. It must be. You must have resources that allow you to pay the tax independent of the value of the Roth transfer.
Okay, I'm learning something here as we speak. I know that there's no benefit to moving, say, $100,000 from an IRA to a Roth IRA, converting that, if the taxes are paid out of it. But you're saying that legally you're not even allowed to do that.
Yes, that's correct.
Oh, my goodness.
So yeah. So in the first year that this happened, which I think was 4 or 5 years ago, there was a rule where you could spread the tax over a 4-year period. And that was quite popular. And there were many people that did this. However, what happened was there was still this restriction on compensation. And there were many people who moved forward with converting their Roth, and then, much to their surprise, maybe got a bonus at the end of the year, and it put them over the limitation, and so they had to reverse the Roth. Very messy, very unpleasant, and was kind of a bad start to a lot of Roth transfers.
Well, we've had good success with putting clients through that process of conversion, and that actually would make a good topic that would probably take 20 or 30 minutes to discuss fully, because I'm forever explaining to clients why this might help them. And many people have taken the leap with part of their IRA money. I'm a little hesitant to do 100% transfer, and I'm especially hesitant to do it all at once because we want to watch out for the tax brackets.
Yeah.
So that's a topic for another day, and I'd love to have you discuss that with us. What aspects of a business do you look at in deciding what type of plan might be appropriate?
I'd say the two primary things is cash flow. Does this business, however large or small, have more money than more income than what they currently want to or are spending on salaries or bonuses? And then the second part, as I talked earlier, is really what is the goal of this retirement plan? Is it to build wealth for the owner or manager group, or is it to provide benefits for employees that, you know, may not have other savings programs, let's say? So it's those are the primary things to look at. And an interest in kind of continuing this. We like most financial people, want to have someone that we're dealing with for some period of time, not just a 1 year and then something happens. We want people to be with us for a long time.
And I would think that you'd also look at demographic information. If the owners are older, they're probably going to be more likely to consider a defined benefit plan because they can fund it quickly, where they don't have the limits on the contributions, whereas younger employees might be more interested in a defined contribution plan if they think they can do well with investments, for example.
Right. Unfortunately, the most common phrase that comes up in doing this, particularly for employees, is, I wish I started earlier. So as I tell my sons, just do the best put all you can in now, because the value of accumulation in time, there's no other thing that's as good as that.
I keep trying to find ways to get that point across to people, and one way that I explain it is, for every 7 years earlier you start, if you earn 10% over the life of the plan, you're going to have twice as much money at the end. So we recently had a listener email us, and he's 23 years old, never had an interest in investing, but happened to hear the podcast and got interested in it. And I said, well, if you are starting at 23 instead of 37, you're starting 14 years earlier than most people, you will have four times as much at the end, very likely, as if you didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a really exciting concept. Another point that I like to tell clients is that if they have children or grandchildren who are earning a few dollars babysitting or mowing lawns, doing odd jobs, there are no lower age limits on something like a Roth IRA.
That's right.
So if the child earns $1,000 in a year, they could even spend it, the parent could take $1,000 and pop it into an IRA for that child.
Yes.
And again, you get that multiplier effect of time being on their side, and they could be 10 or 12 or 15 years old and starting their retirement.
Yep, and they'll be happy people in the future.
Yep, and they might even learn something about saving and investing and kind of get interested in the whole thing. Do you want to talk about what are some of the issues involved in setting up?
Yeah, it's a fairly simple process. It's mostly getting kind of the demographic information, who the trustees are to be, the tax identification number, the reference of the accountant. We often work closely with the accountant or the advisors. And is once getting that and then having the discussion of the plan type, it's a fairly simple process to produce a signature-ready document that is the first step in the process. Once the document is signed, whether it's a pension profit sharing 401k defined benefit, then the funding or the contributions can start as soon as the document is signed.
And in the maintenance of these plans, you talked about filing the Form 5500 each year.
Yes.
And you briefly alluded to testing each year. So you plug numbers into a computer with the different employees' ages and percentages of salary to see if it flies.
Yeah, the various compliance tests are really based on kind of that earlier comment that you have two groups of people, either highly compensated or key employees and non-highly compensated, non-key. That's really how all the tests are structured, so that there's a fair or some amount that's going to get to the non-key, non-highly compensated people if there is a contribution to the owner group. So yeah, we have to, those are various two or three different tests that we have to run for all plans, and that's part of our fee, part of our service.
Are there any interesting stories you could tell us about people who failed to follow one or more of the rules?
Oh yeah, that's always good. And then the correction is always interesting. Kind of the biggest issue historically that many employers have had is the failure of the ADP, average deferral percentage test for 401k, where once the testing is done, there was not sufficient participation in the non-highly or non-key group to allow the owner or manager group to make the deferrals, which they've already made, and it may come back as a non-deductible amount. That's not a happy point to be in when you're telling someone after perhaps the close of the plan year that this has happened. So one of the corrections that we've seen in the past is that there may be young children put on the payroll with high contributions based on, you know, the plan, which is allowable as long as they really have performed some function and they really are deferring into the plan. So that that can, by the testing method, reduce the exposure of some groups if done correctly, timely, and appropriately.
Well, that's an interesting planning point. I hadn't thought of that.
We have, this goes back a few years now, one of the more common corrections is a ongoing plan option, which is called a safe harbor, which is particularly for 401k. And there are two options available under Safe Harbor, either a matching option or a contribution option. And so in recent years, we haven't had the drama of failing these tests as much because we can anticipate the participation and then suggest either a matching Safe Harbor or a contribution Safe Harbor. And it then takes away some of the sting of not meeting the compliance issues.
Yeah, I remember when 401ks were first introduced that people didn't really want to take part of their salary and put it aside, and yet the owners of the businesses could not maintain the plans for their own benefit unless they had the participation. So the matching provision was an encouragement,
yes,
an incentive for the employees, the common rank and file, to make their contribution so the plan could continue. Are there any changes or trends you see on the horizon in retirement planning?
Yeah, very definitely. The kind of the old school of people looking forward to a finite point of retirement, and retirement meaning not working and just either traveling or relaxing, is been muted, I think, in our experience. Whereas we have lots of people that don't want to fully retire. They want to either consult, be semi-retired, transition, maybe take on a new idea or a new product or a new something, where they still stay active or active as much as they want to do. And there can be kind of human interest parts of that. There can be economic interests, meaning, you know, I need to have a little more money for a few more years. And so it's changing. The old model of, you know, someone getting to 65 and that's it is not as common, at least in California, that we see. And so, as I was saying earlier, I'm looking for the right word or expression that describes that person. Or that process, like, and one of the things that we talked about is a semi-R, you know, like a Gen X or a semi-R. Well, that's an interesting concept. Does that really describe what those people might be thinking and doing? So, but it has very definitely been a change in the last 5 years.
Well, of course, a lot of people lost a lot of money in the market downturn starting in 2000, and some of them had to go back to work. Some of them couldn't retire when they wanted mm-hmm. to. And then there are other people like me that enjoy their work so much that I really don't foresee wanting to step away from it, but maybe just stepping away from the more unpleasant parts or the more tedious mm-hmm. parts and doing the more fun parts. So some kind of a gradual transition. You've dealt with a lot of people who've gone through the retirement process, as have I, and certainly we do a lot of projections for people to say, well, how long will your savings last and so on. Are there any rules of thumb that tell you what a person is going to need when they actually do retire?
Yeah, we get asked that quite a bit. And again, it's obviously very individual and depends on all the resources that the person has. But in general, I think that if someone had $1.5 million or $2 million as ready assets, unrelated to their home, unrelated to Social Security, that would certainly provide, in most cases, a substantial amount of income available to them that I've heard from several sources is kind of a goal to have a $2 million combined account, retirement account and a personal account by the time they want to stop working.
Well, we're not only in California, we're in the expensive Bay Area here, mm-hmm. and we have people listening, you know, all over the world. I was thinking more in terms of a percentage. If you're making, you know, X percent while you're working or X number of dollars, what percentage of that number of dollars might get you through in retirement?
Most of the people I've had these conversations want it to be 100%. They like the income. They like the way that they're living, and cutting back and reducing and those kinds of words are not words that are used very often. Maybe I want to be able to buy a new car every 3 or 5 years, and I want to continue traveling like I have, and I'm not going to have tuition expenses or other things. So they can see there's going to be a difference in the outgo. But I don't see a lot of people wanting to have less when they retire.
I can't imagine it either. I was thinking if I were home all the time, I'd have to heat the house constantly and not just, you know, in the evenings or on the weekends, and that could be expensive. So some expenses might actually rise when mm-hmm. you do retire. Other ones would fall. I think my biggest gain from being at work is that I'm not out spending money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not in the stores when I'm in the office, so that's a good thing. And I know that people are going to be facing higher medical costs, and they're going to have longer lifespans.
Yes.
I don't know if you have any input on practical numbers, but I know that the government tables for withdrawals, say, in IRAs, have been extended out past 110.
Yes.
And I think the experience of the life insurance companies that are doing these joint payouts are finding that people are living for a long, long time.
Yeah, and that's certainly what I hear also from other sources is that, you know, we are times people are taking better care of themselves, they know more, and yeah, there is going to be a requirement for an income for a longer period of time than perhaps our parents had.
I personally believe that. I think we're going to see advances in medicine and in personal care, despite the recent medical studies that have come out and conflicted with everything we thought we knew about taking care of mm-hmm. ourselves. You know, we're not smoking as much and we're not drinking as much.
Well, except if it's red wine and now chocolate. Chocolate is...
Lots of chocolate.
Cocoa, I just heard about the cocoa study, so...
It's good for men, too.
It is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. There are things that we can do, and we are doing. So we're going to need a lot of money when we get out there to the end, obviously, and anything we can sock away and save some taxes on over a long period is going to be a good thing. I think it's financial success, in my view, comes from a lot of, some little and some not so little, but a lot of different things that we do that ultimately add up to success at the end. Being able to save enough, being able to do these tax advantage things to some extent, just being smart about all the different aspects is going to be critical.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the things that employees can do to make the most of their retirement plans? They're not in the driver's seat.
Right, they're not. I think the two things that any employee, first thing they can do is save personally, whether or not their company has a retirement plan, to have a savings program. The second thing is, if your employer does not have a retirement plan, is to encourage them to have one. And then if they do, to encourage participation among your fellow employees and to encourage the employer to make either matching or employer contributions to the plan. Some plans, particularly, again, for profitable companies, may offer an option to employees. Do you want to have a cash bonus or do you want to have a contribution bonus? And so that's something that, again, it all boils down to cash flow and profitability and the interest and the ability to make contributions.
And a lot of employees may not be aware that they can make contributions to IRAs in addition to money that's going into a company plan.
They can. They just can't deduct it if they're in a qualified plan. There's on the W-2, there's a box, and it asks the question, are you a member of a qualified plan? And if the answer to that is yes, and that person has made an IRA contribution and deducted it, they will get a letter from the service saying, can't do that. You can always make the contribution. It's just whether you deduct it if you are a member of a qualified plan.
I thought there were income limits on that.
There are some income limits, but they're fairly low.
Yeah.
They're fairly low.
But some people, especially if they're working part-time or they're not highly compensated, they may be able to make a deductible or a Roth contribution
in addition
to the company plan.
That is true.
And then not only the working spouse can make a contribution to a Roth, but the non-working spouse.
That's correct.
And the same limits, $4,000 mm-hmm. for everyone and then a $1,000 catch-up this year for people over 50.
Yes.
So definitely contribute to the retirement plan. What I like to tell people, and you know, correct me or give me some extra ideas if you have any, is to match the 401k up to the
up to the matching limit, or to, contribute to the 401k up to the limit of the matching that the company does, then contribute to a Roth if you're eligible,
mm-hmm.
and then come back and finish the contributions to the 401k.
Yeah, I think that if the person has the income to do that, that would be excellent.
Of course, that's going to, there are some personal issues that come into play. If their tax rate is going to be dramatically higher or lower later, then that could affect that planning. But in some cases, that's an option.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the wonderful things about qualified plans is that the contribution to a qualified plan can be made after the close of the plan year, and it can be made as late as the time of the filing of the tax return. So if it was a corporation and it was a calendar year end, that would mean that the filing date is March 15th. If that corporation is on extension, you add 6 months to that, so that's September 15th. So an employer as late as September 15th after the close of the year can or could make a contribution, write a check and deposit it, and have it be fully deductible to the year-end date. So it's a wonderful, in a way, kind of after-the-fact planning. Your accountant comes back and says, oh, by the way, you've got a $100,000 profit. You can't bonus anything out. You've already passed that limit because it's after the close. You could say, well, maybe we'll make a contribution to the profit sharing plan. Now, the important thing there is you have to have the plan established as of December 31st. It has to be in place. You don't have to fund it until the filing date.
That was going to be my next question. Yeah. You've already answered it. But same thing goes for IRAs.
Mm-hmm.
People can contribute up till April 15th, including extensions.
Yes.
So it's not too late in many cases. And I have an off-the-wall question for you, something that a client asked me 2 or 3 years ago, and I didn't have a ready answer. It's funny how clients will come to me with a question about something that I thought I knew, but they'll come at it from an angle that I'm not familiar with, mm-hmm. looking at the landscape, and it kind of makes me stop and think. So I have a client that has basically a home-based business and chooses to deduct as much as possible or to expense, to write off expenses of the business rather than contributing to making those contributions to a retirement plan.
Mm-hmm.
And she asked me, is it better to have the deductions or to make contributions to a retirement plan? And I've never put together a spreadsheet to look at that. Do you have any sense of that?
Well, again, if the after, there are certain things that are and are not legal to be deducted. So let's assuming all of the deductions are legal. Her accountant is saying yes. And she's done that with the car, the insurance, the travel, and so forth. And there's still income that she is taking or expecting. That would be the amount that would be subject to or is the basis for a contribution. And if that at that point, if the person wanted to, they could make a contribution based on that and have that as an additional deduction.
So it would just be a natural consequence of what was or wasn't a deduction.
Mm-hmm.
If a person had a legitimate deduction and chose not to write that part off and take it as profit, would it be better spent in a retirement plan?
Oh, I think it's always better in a retirement plan because kind of the shield of putting it into a place that says whatever the full description, but somehow says retirement plan, gives you pause. It's not as easy as money market account where the new TV or the new car or whatever it is that might be luring you to spend. It's easier to spend it when there's not kind of this restriction, meaning I've got to go through another step if I wanted to or if I was allowed to take money out of my retirement plan. So it's just, to me, it's you know, it's another protection for the long-term benefit that we all want, but sometimes the short-term benefits, you know, come into play also.
There's often a sacrifice in the short term for the long-term benefit.
Yes, play, I think, is the key word there. It's easier. It's the playing part is easier than the savings part.
But once it's in savings, some kind of a retirement plan, and eventually could be rolled over to an IRA, that IRA can go on for that person's lifetime and through the stretch IRA concept for the succeeding generations.
Mm-hmm.
So money in retirement plans is extremely valuable, gives you all kinds of options later.
Yes.
And we were even exploring another question a client brought up this week, which is, even if the conversion to a Roth may not be of great benefit to the current living IRA owner, it may be a great benefit mm-hmm. to the successive generations.
Yes,
she was thinking about
so.
Going to her mother and saying, gee, could you convert to a Roth? And then,
uh-huh.
you know, I'm going to have benefits down the road.
Yeah, very much so.
So, lots of things to think about. Do you have any last thoughts for our listeners? Something that is near and dear to your heart,
well,
or something I didn't
yeah,
ask?
Yeah, I just think that it's however you do it and how much you can do, any savings is good, and particularly retirement savings is the best. It will, you will look back and you will come in to thank someone like myself that helped you with doing that, or someone like Peter that helped you set it up. I get that often of people that say, I'm really glad I did this. I'm able to do this, this, and this that I would not have been able to do before. So a little sacrifice can go a long way.
Mm-hmm. I agree, and I've met more and more young people who, once they see that this is possible, they're on board even in their 20s.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. So you have information on your website.
Yes.
Including what you call a plan matrix.
Yes.
Which is a big table of lots of different kinds of retirement plans, restrictions, contributions,
mm-hmm.
amounts. You know, if you want a quick guide,
sure.
overview.
It describes each of, not all, but many of the kind of common or popular plan types and compares them one to another. So if you were wondering whether you should have or want to have a 401k plan versus a simple, it describes the differences there. If you were wondering whether you wanted to have a profit-sharing plan or a SEP, which are different plan types, describes eligibility, limitations, and is available at no cost on our website.
The PDF document you can download.
Yes.
You also have a newsletter.
Yes, a monthly newsletter. It again, you can subscribe to it from the website. It just takes a couple of pages of kind of some things that it may be common or current or of interest, and you can subscribe to it and as easily unsubscribe to it.
So we have to tell people where the website is. It is www.retirementadmin.com.
Just like it sounds, retirementadmin.com, yes.
And we will put that address in our show notes so people can click through to it. Where else can business owners, or for that matter, employees, go to learn more about retirement plans?
Well, there are certainly books and magazines and services that can be subscribed to. There are some government websites that describe certain types of options plans. But there's not one place where everything would be accessible. You have to kind of go to, I'd say, several places to find things. You can certainly get a book, you know, online or at a bookstore that talks in general and might get specific about certain plan types. So that's available. Again, our website gives current information and of interest to people. So that may be a start.
So it's a big topic area, and it's a constantly changing area because tax laws are changing. I'm encouraged and pleased that in the last few years, our government has seen fit to provide lots of incentives for people that mm-hmm. save, made the plans more and more generous and more flexible. So that's
we
good
hope
stuff.
That continues. But this is our third iteration of increases in these deductible amounts that since I've been in the business. So I know full well that it's not a guarantee, but it certainly is a nice nice way that it's happening currently.
Yeah, we've got the budget deficits and the shortfalls in financing our government, and sooner or later they're going to come and they're going to want a piece of us.
We want more.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And they're just going to have to do that. Well, I certainly appreciate you coming by, spending time with us, and hope that this has been a nice introduction to retirement plans for business owners today.
Thank you for having me, Peter.
Well, I'm here with Sam Harding, and a little bit of time has passed since we did the original recording of the interview. Since then, the Pension Protection Act of 2006 was passed, and we're in 2007, so there's some new limits on retirement plan contributions. So maybe you could just give us a quick update
Sure.
on those new limits.
Well, what happens in the pension world is that these, we call them dollar limits, change each year by statute. And they historically used to go up as a cost of living adjustment, and now they more or less go up in different types of increments, generally in flat dollar amounts. So to give you an example, in 2006, the 401k deferral was $15,000. That has increased to $15,500 for 2007. The catch-up contribution for anyone who reaches age 50 by December 31st was $5,000 in 2006. It remains the same at $5,000. The other kind of common number that people are interested in is what's called the defined contribution limit, and that means that's the total amount that any one person can have in a defined contribution type plan in the year. That went from $44,000 in 2006 to $45,000. And then if you add in a 401k feature for catch-up, you could get to $50,000 total. So those are the adjusted dollar limitations. There are some others, but those are the most common numbers that that people are interested in.
Those are some pretty amazing limits compared to some years ago.
They are. It's the good news is the trend is upward.
Yes. Lots of rewards for savers
mm-hmm.
in the last
mm-hmm.
few years, and more coming. Are there any provisions in the Pension Protection Act that apply now or that are upcoming that you'd just like to mention in passing?
Sure. There are a few that are applying now. One, the charitable IRA contribution for 2006 and 7 for anyone who has an IRA or a rollover account can contribute $100,000 as long as they're 70 and a half in each of those 2 years. So 2006 is passed, so that's for 2007 they could do that. The other is that there is an additional reporting requirement for defined contribution plans that have individually directed accounts that goes into effect in 2007. And most of the other provisions phase in over the 2008 to 2010 period. One of the big changes that we see coming is the what's going to be called a defined benefit combination plan, which will be a defined benefit with a 401k feature. Now, if someone, a business, wants to have both of those features or both of those elements, they have to have two plans. So going forward, starting in 2008, there will be the ability to have one plan that's a defined benefit plan and have a 401k feature as part of that plan.
401k feature meaning?
The ability to defer into a savings account in addition to putting money aside for a defined benefit plan.
Which I would imagine is beneficial because the monies are held separately,
yes.
And they're not at risk with
right.
the...
And from a tax point of view, the contribution for a defined benefit plan or any qualified plan comes from the employer. 401k, it's called a deferral. The deferral comes from the employee. So this is the first time where there is a combination of a defined benefit plan and a defined contribution plan, which is what 401k is, in one plan. So we think we'll see quite a few people take that attribute of having a 401k feature in with their defined benefit plan.
Interesting stuff going on. What about the new choice that's in the company's hands to have the default be the opt-in for the 401k plan?
Yeah, the term that's being used now is automatic enrollment. And when this first started, the term was negative enrollment, but obviously
that doesn't sound
nearly as good. So
the marketer's out.
The automatic enrollment is the current term, and what that means is that in a defined contribution plan, 401k type plan, the company will put a limitation on what each employee will automatically have as a deferral. Now, the employee always has the option of not doing that. But the difference is now an employee has to fill out and actively seek to participate. Now, with automatic enrollment, they will have to actively seek not to participate. So what everyone sees, of course, is quite an increase in enrollment because, as in many cases, inertia is what often keeps people from taking that step to enroll. So we see that as a big step for more people being in participation in 401k plans, larger contributions being made, more money to be invested in the stock market. So I think it's overall a very, very good thing that's going to happen. And that goes into effect in 2008.
Oh, okay. And concomitant with that is the ability for companies to choose an advisor for a plan, or
exactly, yes, that's becoming more of a not so much of a requirement, but it's getting close to being a requirement. It's a suggestion, it's a recommendation, and there will be guidelines of what that means, what the choices should be. But I think as a result of the Enron debacle and other places where there have been problems with people not getting accurate advice, this will be a way for advisors to be more connected to participants in plans, and participants will get better, cheaper, more accurate advice from advisors.
Depending on who they can select, I guess.
That's right. It'll be a very broad process of selection, and there will be some guidelines which haven't been firmed up yet that will come. But it will generally be about diversification, risk tolerance for that particular person, and a reporting element of that.
Very good. So hopefully you'll come back maybe once a year and keep us updated on what business owners can do.
I'd be happy to do so. As things go, Congress always finds new reasons for making changes, and that keeps us busy.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you taking time here tonight before giving your presentation.
Thank you. Happy to do so. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Sam and Peter. That was a fantastic interview. I learned a lot. One thing to note is that Sam has an incredible voice. He sounds like a news anchor. It's beautiful. But obviously more important was the information was fantastic. So
yeah,
thanks for that.
He really makes the concepts as clear as they can be without oversimplifying. But I hate it when they sound better than I do. You know, I'm the host of the show.
For gosh sakes.
Oh, well. Now, remember, don't go away, because we're going to have a new segment on this show, a little ending segment, which is an interview with Mike, who is a success story, and a very interesting success story.
We'll look forward to listening to that. In the meantime, if our listeners have any questions for Sam or for Peter about this interview or anything else, you can go to our website, www.promoneytalk.com. You can ask us questions online, and you can also join our mailing list. Those people on our mailing list get announcements when new shows come out.
And that's important, because I'm a subscriber to other podcasts I listen to. And in some cases, they've changed their feed. And all of a sudden, I stopped getting the podcast and wonder where the heck these people went. And if they had a newsletter, I would have received the newsletter saying, oh, you know, resubscribe. We have a new feed. We didn't just stop doing the show, whatever. And we're not planning to change anything here, but just being able to stay in touch with you, keep you informed about what we're up to. And as Jason said, let you know when new episodes come out.
Now, you can go to the site again to find out more about Sam. But Peter, you have some information for our listeners right now as well.
I wanted to say that Sam Harding is an accredited pension administrator, and he has a practice located in Los Altos, California. He has a website that we have included in our show notes, but it's www.retirementadmin.com. You can go there to learn more about Sam and his business. I think it's obvious from the show that if you're a business owner and you want to set up a retirement plan, it's probably a good idea to get some professional advice and to have somebody helping you administer the plan to stay in compliance, to do the calculations about whether it's top heavy, make sure the filing and the paperwork is done, to change the documents when they need changing. It's really kind of a moving target because it's determined by the tax laws, which are changing all the time. But Sam's a great resource. He's not the only guy in the world who does this, but as we mentioned in the bio and the show notes, he's been on the board of directors for the National Institute of Pension Administrators, past president of the Northern California chapter. He is a good resource. And also on his website, he has a PDF document that compares the various types of retirement plans, including advantages and disadvantages. You can go to the website and just download that.
Now, the next segment is Mike, who's a young saver, and you interviewed him a bit ago for this success story.
Can you imagine a young person who actually sort of interviews older people and asks them what they would have done differently about the way they handled money? That just boggles my mind.
So smart. We're always learning, but it's so difficult for us to ask people and to even know what to ask. So this is a really inspiring story. And of course, Peter is always looking for more stories for success stories.
I am. I'm looking for stories where people have maybe not even attained the traditional definition of success, of having a whole bunch of money piled up somewhere and being rich. But success comes in big chunks and little chunks, and it comes in the form of money mastery over little things that add up over a lifetime. Like Mike, he's sort of mastered one piece of it that's going to get him off on a good footing. So I would certainly welcome suggestions, stories, referrals to people who have mastered some aspect of their money lives. And as you hear more and more of these stories, I think you'll get a sense of what we're trying to do here, sort of inspire people and give them some understanding of what other people have gone through.
And by putting all these pieces together, people who have mastered certain areas, our listeners will get a more complete picture and maybe have a more complete mastery. At any rate, please enjoy the following interview. And until next show, here's to your success.
Our success story is a young man named Mike H. Mike, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here, Peter. Thank you for having me.
Mike, you're the son of some personal friends and called me up a while ago to talk about your IRA. Why don't you tell the listening audience, if you will, a little bit about yourself, your age and your background and what your education is and what your aspirations are?
Sure. Well, I'm 23 years old. Born and raised in San Jose, California with my family. Went to Santa Teresa High School. Not much there. Goofed around a lot. After I got out of high school, I went to the Navy for 4 years. More to better myself and see some of the world and stuff. Since I came back here, I'm trying to get a degree. Uncle Sam's paying for me. I'm trying to get a degree in nutrition. Hopefully be a personal trainer someday. And yeah, just looking towards to better my future right now.
Well, I'm pretty impressed with what you've done and where you're headed. What got you interested in saving and investing?
Well, I got to give a lot of credit to my father. Ever since I was a little kid, he's always been like, you know, getting on me about saving money. Even when I was a little kid and they would give us allowance like $5, he'd always say like 10% savings, 10% to the Lord, and the rest would be, you know, for spending money. So he's always been on my back about that, which I'm really glad for. Plus, I've been talking, I'm really into like the older generation. I like to hear what they have to say, what they would do differently, because they've obviously been there. They know what's going on. They've been through all the stuff that we think we've been through. And a lot of people, they've told me, I mean, even in the Navy, a lot of people told me that they wish they saved more money, amongst other things, but that was a big one. They wish they got into like investing. They wish they got to save more money. And for some reason, that just stuck with me. And I've always meant to do it. And I started, you know, I went and got an IRA at the Navy Credit Union just to get my feet wet, just to get started. And when I came back here, that's when I met you, and you were able to put me on the right direction. Pretty much right now, I mean, it's just been like a matter of just listening to through people throughout the years, and it just really made me think about my future and what I should be doing to help myself in the future. Yeah, I want to be sitting good when I get in the future. I don't want to be, you know, struggling to get by. I want to be able to help my future family out as much as possible. You know, I want them to have options. I want me to have options. I don't want to be, you know, struggling through life. I want to be able to help myself. And if I can have, you know, a good amount of money and start right now, then that's good for me right there.
Well, I think it's fantastic that you trust that older people have wisdom. I grew up in a generation where people over 30 were not to be trusted, or so we thought. But there are certain rules that apply to all of us. Yeah, like gravity, whether we like it or not, it's there, and money works a certain way, and checking out other people's stories is important, and that's why we're here talking about yours today. I think it's fantastic that you already had an interest and got started with the IRA and then contacted me as a professional to refine your strategy a little bit. My father told me when I was in college that people would be willing to help me if I was willing to help myself. And I found that to be true. So it's my pleasure to be there to help you get off on the right foot. Because one of the things that we discovered, or that I spoke about with you, was that if you have your money in a credit union or a CD or something like that, a savings account, you earn a modest amount of interest. But when you have decades ahead to save, in your case, maybe 30, 40, 50 years, earning a few extra percent that you could do, say, through stocks will make all the difference. And when we projected the numbers forward, that was a real eye-opener.
Oh, yeah, that was real exciting. I knew I was going to be making money, but geez, man, I didn't think it was going to be up in the millions like that. So, yeah, I'm really excited, and I'm pretty set on the fact that I'm going to follow through with this as much as I possibly can. And another reason is, you know, this whole war situation with Bush and stuff. I mean, the Social Security. I figure now in this day and age, you got to look out for yourself. You know, nobody else is going to be able to take care of you. And right now, you know, I'm looking out for myself. I'm going to make sure I have enough money to retire. I'm not going to, you know, you can't rely on the government. You can't rely on anybody else. I mean, they can be there to help, but you ultimately, you got to fend for yourself, in my opinion.
Yeah, our country sort of has that ethic.
Yeah.
And I think even in other countries where they're trying to take care of everybody, it's sort of dragging everybody down to some extent.
Oh, it's hard. It's really hard. I mean, there's so many people, and it's just like, it's almost foolish to think that, you know, oh, the government's going to take care of me right now. I mean, even with my grandma right now, I mean, they're giving her Social Security, but it's not enough to pay for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And now, for our generation, we're lucky if we're even going to get it. So, you know, I'm just looking out for myself. I'm not going to rely on anybody else.
Well, I think if we all took care of ourselves, we would all be happier.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you just got to be realistic about it, you know? And you just
yeah,
really
you're not
going to
be a burden on someone else, and you're going to have more options.
Yeah.
It's all good.
For sure.
We're not talking about, you know, being selfish. We're just talking about taking care of business and storing up some nuts for the winter, really.
Oh, yeah, not at all. I mean, yeah, I'm not trying to be selfish in any aspect. I'm just trying to, I mean, this is more for my future family as well as myself, too, you know?
Yeah, you told me that down the line you want to have a house and do some other things, and we'll gradually add more detail to your plan so that you'll be able to meet multiple goals, but just getting started early is huge. Most people don't know how much it helps to start earlier. For example, if you're going to earn 10% in the long run being in stocks, every 7 years earlier you start, you'll have twice as much at the end. So that single contribution you've already made because it's so early will be huge for you. You know, contributing every year going forward, you'll have 10 or 20 years on your peers, which will mean 3, 4, or 5 times what they'll have at the end.
Yeah, I remember you telling me that. What really helped me is I think I really got good with saving money when I was in the Navy, because when I got in the Navy, you know, you got these guys, they just get in the Navy and they get all this money and everything, and most guys go out and just, like, you know, either buy a house or buy the newest, you know, Corvette or whatever. But I just bought, like, you know, the car that would get me from point A to point B. It's nothing fancy. It's got no power locks, nothing like that. I mean, it's starting to fall apart right now. I got to roll down the window just to open up my door. But, you know, I figure right now, you know, it's that's all I really need to get me, you know, to point A to point B. I don't need anything too great because I can't afford it right now. When I was in the Navy, my biggest goal was to save enough money to go traveling. So I'd put away so much money every paycheck into a savings account. And eventually that grew and grew and grew. And just over like maybe like a 2.5 year period, I was able to save like over like 15 grand.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't really penny pinching. I was saving a little bit more than I should, and I wouldn't be able to do that now because, you know, I'm not making as much. And if I was saving that much now, I wouldn't be able to go out and do anything. I'd be stuck in my house all day, you know? And I don't believe that you should penny pinch to the point where you don't have any fun, because life's all about fun. You need to have fun too. But you got to be able to budget yourself and be mature enough to, like, save as much money as you possibly can, like, in a percentage. And I'm still doing that right now. I mean, I don't make that much money at GNC, but I do put at least some money aside because I want to keep that habit going, even if it's only like 10, 20 bucks. You know, at least I put something in the bank, you know what I mean? At least I got that going. Once I make more money, then I'll just up it up a little bit.
Well, I couldn't offer any better advice, even with 20-some years of experience counseling people. You're exactly on the right track with that. What would you say to other young people who may not be thinking about saving yet?
I think it's a real good idea. Personally, I do. Because like I said, like the examples I gave before with, you know, the government and stuff, and just a lot of young people are not really, they don't really know how to save. That aspect is not really brought to their attention, whether it's through their family or with anybody else. They don't really think about it. But it is a really, I personally think it's a very important aspect that one should, like, you know, practice. Because you may have fun now, you know, you have your family, you know, the security of, like, you know, living at home and everything, but once you get older, unless you got a really good job, it's more like a security thing, you know what I mean? It's like insurance. You know, you got to be able to, like, take care of yourself in the end. But I think it's a real good thing amongst young people because it's going to make your life a whole lot easier. Plus, it's just a good practice, and, you know, you want to be able to take care of yourself and your family in the future.
I think you brought up a good point that it's just not on people's minds. It's not in their thought processes. Mm-hmm. So maybe by talking about it, a few people will get some ideas, and maybe some parents will share this with their kids, because I don't have any doubt that you are going to have millions when you retire. True that it won't be worth what it's worth today, but you'll have some financial security, which will allow you to not worry so much. It'll reduce your stress. It'll allow you to take some chances if you want to in your career. It'll just open up all kinds of options for you. And I think it sets a great example. So I'm here for you. We'll keep thinking about where to put that money every year, and we'll talk about how to start saving for other things as time goes on. Thank you very, very much for being on the show.
My pleasure, Peter. Thank you for having me.